You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, representing Secret of the Sailor Madness, it's Dwayne.
Hello, it's just me.
And representing Dynamite in the Brain, it's me, Brian.
Tag team champions again.
Yep. there's no JoJo's news, but I don't know if you've seen the trailer for the live action Psyche K.
I have seen the trailer.
It's the same actor who's playing Josuke.
That's so bizarre.
It is, yes. And I have to say, after seeing the trailer, I was like, boy, I wish the guy doing that was doing the JoJo's film. It's no offense to...
I know, it seems to have kept the colour and the madness of it, sure. Yeah.
He's also got Gintama on the go, and he's got Saint Young Men coming as well.
Mm.
And he did the Hentai Kamen movies.
Oh, that was him, was it?
That was him, yeah.
Okay.
And he did Mr. Nietzsche in the Convenience Store that we've both watched. So, yeah, and the Psyche K film looks spot on to the point.
I mean, like, that might be the way I have to watch it, because I wanted to get into it, but those fucking subtitles, man.
Yeah, those subtitles are pretty hard going.
Mm.
It hasn't shown up on Crunchyroll. Hopefully it will eventually, because there's a second season coming later this year. So we shall see what happens with My Hero Academia, I think.
That's going to be the indicator, I think, yeah.
But we'll more on My Hero Academia later in the episode.
Yep. That news comes up as part of the episode.
Okay. First, though, Dragon Ball Super episode 82. Never forgive Son Goku. Toppo, the warrior of justice, intrudes.
So, what? Toppo just kind of arrives and asks, see if he can get a fight.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to start a fight, obviously. But
he does.
He doesn't want to do it without Zeno's permission.
Mm-hmm. And then they go at each other, almost killing each other.
Yep, they really go all out, and he's a master of... He's actually, despite being a big fat dude, he's very athletic, and he's good at grapples, which I guess makes sense considering you have giant hands. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and unlike the fox people, they seem to be able to tell these guys ki.
He's that powerful.
Yeah. and he's using a lot of wrestling moves, I'd say.
Yeah. They have wrestling-sounding names rather than the usual dragon. I mean, like, he obviously has, like, a shooty raise out of his fingertips.
But he has lots of the throws and tosses and things. Mm. And he does loads of moves, which Gohan thinks is cool, because he does all this superhero posing. Because Beerus is like, what an idiot. And Gohan's like, I think he's cool.
And then Beerus gives him a look. That's basically what Gohan wants to be, yeah.
Yeah. But Toppo does not find Goku cool.
Nope. He's calling him out as a villain, and Goku seems to be kind of nearly relishing his, he's like, oh, I guess I'm the bad guy now. Guess I better kick your ass, kind of thing. And I'm like, Goku, come on.
But before they kill each other, the high priest, or whatever he's called, I can't remember his...
The top angel.
Yes, with his dad.
Yeah, it's revealed this episode. Yeah, he's dead.
Yes, sort of says. I think they've mentioned it before.
Have they mentioned it before? Yeah. I'm not sure the other characters were aware of it.
No, not sure, but I think they may have mentioned it before. I think the first time they went to see.
Oh, Zeno. Yeah. I think you might be right.
Let's save this for the fight. And Toppo mentions his teammate's even more powerful than him, and it's something the Grey. I forgot to write down his first name.
Oh, sure, yeah, I forgot it as well. Yeah.
But quite clearly, it's the guy in the opening credits.
Yeah. There's a guy who's stronger than me.
Who presumably will be one of the main characters in this arc.
Yeah. Yep. And Goku's set up firmly as the villain, and they're all like, you know, everyone's like going to go for Goku in this tournament, and Beerus just freaking out.
And then they give, like, how long it's going to be. And then they go, can we have that in some sort of numbers we can understand?
Yeah, it's like in the 50 billionth fucking year of thing, they go through the entire number, like, we'll finish this arena. It's going to be a pretty complicated arena, so it'll take about five clicks.
Yeah, five ticks or something. Yeah.
Ticks, or some silly word. And it's like, what is that? 40 hours in human time.
Right. They go, And Beerus is like, hey, that's your dad, Whis. Can you bribe him so we don't have to take part?
Yeah, and he's like, oh, it's easy for fucking you. You get off scot-free, like, giving out to
him. And Champa's like, we've got to select 10 people? Do you know if he has 9 brothers?
I'm guessing the choices were mostly Ciampa's, and he does actually. Well, since his universe has such a high ranking in comparison to Universe 7, they probably are doing pretty okay for themselves.
Yeah, there's some other people. We got the names of the Angel and the.
Yes.
And the Kai, and but again, I forgot to write them down from 11's universe.
Yep. The Great Justice Warrior is fucking guy, yeah.
Their Kai seems a bit of a piece of work as well.
He seems to be up to something.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, I want to get a good feel for these guys. I want to show off our power kind of thing. That's not even our strongest guy. We didn't even bring our strongest guy. That's how confident we are.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. They've just got to go back. They say, we've got Gowan and Boo, so I'm sure we can find seven more people. Let's
just
go.
To make the numbers.
But they're like, but the Beerus demands that they have a tactical meeting at Bulma's over food because he wants to make sure he gets a chance to eat all of Earth's tasty food before it's destroyed.
So, I mean, like, it's two reasons. Number one, he's going to Bulma's, who is the smartest person. So that's smart thinking. And also, she's rich, so they can feed him. So, yeah, good choice, Beerus.
But I think it also tells how much of an impression Bulma's made on Beerus over all these episodes.
Yeah, it's a pity we can't hold the world's smartest person fucking contest because Bulma invented a time machine that we literally can't even show because we'd get in so much trouble. Other than that, just a pretty good fight most of this episode. Yep.
And it looks like we're getting a bunch of comedy and Bulma and Vegeta focused episode next week.
Yep, and a bunch of, what is that? Is it pilates or that kind of exercise pregnant women?
Oh, Pilates.
That's it. I had the wrong word completely. Yeah.
With Pilaf and the gang.
Should be good for a laugh, yeah.
Yeah, I hope all these people come and watch the fight as well.
Well, they did make seats for spectators. In
yes,
it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. See if your universe survives.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Mm. It's good to have it back after a week away.
Yep.
Okay, next up is Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 24, The Legend of the Shadow. More fighting.
Yeah, surprisingly action-packed episode of Ninja Girl.
And bloodier than anything else we watched this week.
Mostly through her own fault, though.
Yes, yeah, because at one point she gets hit with an anesthetic. And so to prevent it reaching the rest of her body, she hacks into her own arm. Yeah.
And your man's really impressed by this, but then she can't find the right vein, so she just keeps cutting up her own arm. Oh, jeez. The entire joke of it is he's really impressed with her ninja skills, but then she shows her incompetence just as much.
And this is Zenjubo, who is a historical figure who will come to an unfortunate end. A really grisly end.
Well, you're not a good ninja if they recorded your name in the books, as we know.
That is true, yes. But no, as unfortunate endings go, it's like it's building up now of characters who are going to, if this
just
thing goes
go
on,
really badly, yeah.
It's going to be like, oh, Oda Nobunaga, what are you doing?
I don't know if I should look up like how shit goes down, because it's kind of amusing to me. It's like, oh, this is a wacky character, and then how horribly they might die later on.
Yes, because they both survive, and she comes back, and they're like, oh, looks like you must have done well, because you're covered in blood. And she's like, oh, no, that's all mine.
Whereas she did actually do well. She prevented your man entirely from his mission, which was just going to spy on him, but he said, yeah, I might as well assassinate some generals while I'm here. Like,
Yep.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah, pretty much. Just kind of setting up the next set of baddies. Or actually, it kept them all in shadow, didn't it?
Yeah, it's Rokukoku. I forgot to note down. This is a running theme, me forget to write down names this week. I'm normally quite good at writing down any new characters' names. But Zenjubo, I remembered, who's the ninja.
Right.
But I couldn't remember the guy who sent him out.
Hmm. But they've been kind of literally kept in shadow so far to reveal, I guess.
Yeah, you could probably look at Wikipedia and figure it out.
Yeah. You could actually just find out who they are. But what are they going to look like and what's their wacky thing going to be?
And no Shonen Shibe this week again. But we're still catching up with Bono Bono. I think we're still about 13 weeks behind.
Yeah.
Episode 36, Sissy's Errand.
I thought it was episode 35. Oh, I must be wrong in my notes.
No, 36 is correct.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, 35 was the landslide one.
Grand. Yes. So this is our end, in which we find out, hey, guess what? Chipmunk's sister, she's a jerk.
So, yeah, Di asks, she's got to take some medicine to Auntie.
For her eyes.
Yeah, and Chipmunk needs to come along to help her.
Because there could be dangerous things on the road, Brian. Like a sharp rock.
Yes. Gotta watch out for those sharp rocks. But there are literally dangerous things on the road.
Oh, there are actually dangerous things,
We're going over things which aren't dangerous, and then they come to the river, which is running really fast. And there's this...
I like the fact that about Sis, you can't swim. It's like, it should be all right as long as I can stay on the ivy we have across the thing. And she, like, gets swept away in it and just barely out of it. And she just kind of comes out of it like, well, I didn't die, so that went well.
But that apparently is how she's getting across safely every time, is that...
Because she hasn't died yet.
She sort of indicates that what happened to her there is what normally happens. And that's how it happens safely.
Yeah, but I'm with Chipmunk here. That's not safe.
No, it's not. And then they get to a big clearing and they see a hawk in the sky and Chipmunk says, will it bully me? And then finally somebody says, yes, it will bully you.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And what plans do they... Oh, they're going to hide under a tree.
But the hawk will see that there's a moving bush. Yes. And just go for that. Chipmunk is going to spit. She refuses to spit and also doesn't understand how that would help.
No.
Because it wouldn't, really.
No, it would not. I think Chipmunk just wanted the opportunity to spit.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I imagine normally Di would not appreciate Chipmunk spitting. So the only thing you can do is run across as fast as you can.
Mm. He gets a good hit on the hawk as well.
Yes, but then it comes back round and carries him off. Which was like, whoa, this got very real all of a sudden.
Yeah, and she's off in the edge of the clearing crying away. But fortunately, Fishing Cat has shown up with Chipmunk. But let's not explain that. We need to deliver the medicine. So what happened in that story? It's like, nope, no room for Fishing Cat.
There's a good bit in this week's Black Clover, similar to that. It's like all these characters had gone off to try and find a way to bring... I've forgotten the guy. The main character's arms back to health. But we only saw one of the stories of that happening.
The characters that were off screen were still doing shit.
Yeah, we're still doing shit. So they've all come back and they all look very different.
Okay.
But as soon as they're told that they didn't need... It didn't matter that they didn't succeed, they all suddenly revert back to normal. So it was just a gag. But it was a pretty good gag.
Okay.
He's brought back. They go see the aunt. And he's impressed at his sister's ability to talk like an adult.
Yeah, he didn't let the aunt get a word in. it's kind of like, I guess the thing is, he's annoyed at her because, like, this is not a safe fucking journey. Just because you haven't died yet. But he's impressed by her ability to act like an adult and by actually having a conversation, I guess.
Well, make small talk, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like the stereotypical things you'd hear. What you think adults were talking about as a kid, and you'd be like, this does not sound like anything I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ability I don't have, and I'm impressed, but yeah, no, it sounds boring.
Yeah, I mean, this felt like, partly because of the hawk thing, I think mainly because of the hawk thing, this felt like the least anthropomorphic the characters have been.
Yeah, they felt like animals for once.
Yes.
Their lives were in peril because they are, I was going to say squirrels, because they're chipmunks, yeah.
And then there was something going to bully Chipmunk.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Okay, Hey Bot, episode 25, no title mentioned. As somebody said on Twitter, let me see if you find the tweet of somebody. Somebody retweeted one of my Hey Bot tweets, this Japanese account, and then I was... and then I saw they'd written something in English, and it says, I'm afraid that non-Japanese people cannot understand Hey Bot number 25 at all.
Well, is that true?
His fears are pretty much spot on.
Oh. That's unfortunate.
So what it involves is there is a talent competition, a sort of a joke-telling competition.
Mm. Which is basically the plot of Hey Bot, though, right?
Sort of, but this is a real one. Presumably exactly like a particular type on TV in Japan.
Right.
And... guest starring in this episode are the comedy duo Nagaraboshi, I believe they're called, who apparently are the diplomats for Haybot are sponsoring them or something to promote Haybot. Anyway, so they appear in this.
Oh, okay.
As themselves. One of them is dressed up as Haybot.
Wait, like live action or?
No, as animated versions of themselves, but I believe
this wouldn't be unusual in Haybot. That's why I asked.
No, exactly. bit voicing themselves, I do believe. And then there's a crane who wants to take part, which I'm sure is a reference to a myth, which I didn't look up. Because by the end of it, I was like, oh, I vaguely remember that reference. Because he wants to become a star, and then it becomes like a pun of him actually becoming like a star in the sky at the end. Mm. And I was like, I'm sure there's a myth about a crane becoming a star of some kind. Anyway, they enter this competition. It's being judged by Nejiro's brother, who finds none of them funny, not even the professional comedians. Then there's a bit where these guest stars on your TV program have lines they say where people always tell us we're not as good as we're not very good on television. So they're kind of like doing this self-depreciation thing.
Okay.
And then they come back and finally make his brother laugh, and then they have a battle, and the problem is the jokes they're barely jokes in the terms of what we'd recognize as jokes.
Is it like heavily puns or?
It's heavy puns, but they're puns to the point where it's almost like the pun is all there is.
Right.
So there's no setup. It's just like you're expected to recognize what the pun is and how the play on words works, which maybe you could do in English as well, but I suspect it would not translate at all.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's a thing for that kind of comedy, currently, anyway.
No. And they do some stuff of their own, which you could see on YouTube, which, again, had the mickey taken out of it because it was old material. I mean, they were very game to appear in this show and basically be insulted by the show.
I think that's the point of Haybot. Like,
it is true, yes. I'm sure it's part of it. Yes. Yeah. So, again, it refers to them as coming from cool Japan, referring to the. So apparently, Japan in the world of Haybot is actually called cool Japan as the country.
Okay.
And, yeah, they try and leave the country at the end and they can't. They're stuck.
Oh.
But it didn't really progress the plot at all. And as that guy said, it's kind of hard to understand. And I'm sure even me explaining it, I've probably missed nuance and detail.
It does sound kind of interesting. I mean, like, it seems to have ended even in the case, like, where Grant Morrison got stuck in the comics after writing himself in. It might come up again.
Yeah, I mean, they may come up again because the other character they had, who was the parody character, has shown up again.
Okay.
But yeah, it didn't really progress the plot, none.
Okay.
Right, on to things which were a little bit more coherent. Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, episode 10. Troop Dragon on stage. Open brackets, they had a troop name, huh? Close brackets.
Yep, it's the Christmas episode.
Yeah, this made me think, was this supposed to have come out last year? Because if it came out last year,
they were very slow on making it.
This would be pretty spot on, and then we get a New Year's episode next week.
Yeah. It was possibly supposed to come in like a half season or something like that.
Yeah, maybe a season last season.
Mm.
Oh, or maybe they came in really early and it was supposed to be later this year.
Yeah, either way, it's just like it seems slightly off.
Yeah, you occasionally get them. It's because it's in episode 10, I think it might have been late or something. Because often a long-running show might be running through so much manga so quickly that the Christmas episodes come in the middle of the year. Because that's what happened to Psyche K. I think it ran through an entire year's worth of stuff. And then it made a joke that even though we've run through an entire school year, in the next episode we'll still be in the same school year of school we were at the start of the show.
Yeah.
Because we're never going to get older.
Well, that's often the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty standard, as in the dragons misunderstand what it is you need to put on in a Christmas play.
Yeah, it's kind of one story all the way through, basically.
Yeah, no cuts to short bits or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, the guy at the shopping, what do they call it?
Oh, the shopping district?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, he's the butcher or whatever there.
Yeah, he's injured, and he was supposed to organise the Christmas play for the old folks at the old folks' home, and as Toru is the idol of the shopping district.
Like, she's just there sitting on him, commenting, and was like, oh, did you break your leg? He's like, oh, yeah, I was practicing for a thing. And she's like, how feeble. You know, being kind of insulting. But they're just like, oh, we love Toru. She's great. Yes.
Well, that's because she dealt with that thief that time.
Well, that, and she's very friendly.
Yes. So yeah. They ask, can you organize it? And she says, yes.
She's so, like, complimented on... Well, all the compliments he's giving her, yes. I suppose, thinking she'll be able to do it.
So she rounds up all the other regular characters, apart from Kobayashi, who's busy at work.
Yeah, Christmas crunch. and all of her reliable friends. And I was like, well, that's a joke in itself.
Yes.
Yeah. Because obviously Fafnir doesn't want to have anything to do with it. And also they have, like, they have two humans there, but their humans are children.
Yes.
Who don't know that they're dragons.
Well, I'm not even sure if one of them really is a child, they're a mage, whether that is still actually a human.
Okay, that's true. I guess he's aware of monsters.
He's aware of dragons, yes. He's
but I'm not sure if he knows they're dragons.
No, maybe he thinks the other's dragons, but thinks...
that's true, yeah.
What's-her-face is a succubus. It just...
Why is he agreeing to this?
I don't know.
Oh, dear.
So there's like a comedy of them each having a go at being the director and coming up with ideas.
I think my favorite joke was Fafnir ringing later on the phone saying, I've got a great idea. We'll make them magical girls. And Toru just like hangs up on him mid-sentence. I was just like, that's good.
But they end up putting... They want to do the little match girl, but they end up putting loads of other ideas into the play as well.
Okay, so it's the little matchstick girl. It's... Oh, shit, I forgot the name of your man who sells the hats. The old man who sells hats? Oh, I can't remember, think of the
I
name
can't
of the
right
story. 47 Ronin.
Yeah.
A magical girl type scenario, deal with the devil thing, like you've seen. What else is in there? There's a few other things. Unless I've named them all, have I?
No, I think that's everything.
It's just they're all mismatched together to such a point where nobody stays in character for very long.
No.
Like the little matchstick girl is totally willing to destroy humanity as soon as the opportunity is given.
But the old folks enjoy it. Kobayashi comes along and watches, and she's quite pleased she didn't have to interfere. Everything
she's really worried she has to interfere, but they all seem to think it's CGI or something. a good joke again.
But yes, I think she's impressed that Toru managed to organise all this without there being any problems, even though they start lighting fires on stage at one point.
Yeah, she thinks they're not holding back, but they're actually holding back enough because they're just doing it for play acting. I think the only like recurring joke is what's the young dragon? Kanna, is it?
Yes.
Her waiting for Santa and wanting there to be a chimney.
Yeah, that's a pretty good... the payoff of that.
Payoff of that's pretty good.
It's really funny, yes. When they've built a chimney on the side of the house with the sign saying, Good Girl Kanna lives here.
And big neon letters. And Kobayashi trying to sneak in the presents and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, this was one of the better ones. It's been kind of down a little, but this one picked it up a bit. Yeah.
Right, next up, the final episode of Time Bokan 24. Well, the final episode for now.
Yeah.
Episode 24, The Genius Da Vinci was the final episode.
So, okay, so 24 was obviously going to be the last episode. And the true history of Leonardo da Vinci was that he wasn't a guy who was good at lots of things. He was 24 guys.
Yes.
We're good at specific things. We're into specific things. That guy painted the Mona Lisa, and you can tell because he's like, wow, I really want to paint a lady.
But before we get to that, though,
yeah,
the Akidama Trio plug My Hero Academia at the start.
That was fucking great because they're doing like a weather report, again, like they're saying, to supplement their income. And it's not a weather report so much as how much are we getting paid to do this report, which the answer is not fucking much. And they're like, and what's coming up tomorrow? Fucking My Hero Academia, that's not us. It's like, can we be on it? Because we don't have any quirks. That kind of thing. And they're really trying to sell it themselves and the Darumaka guy. They're just they're shilling the next show, which I thought was pretty great.
Yeah, the thing they're going to replace, yes.
Yep.
And then Suzuki at one point does a impression of All Might as well.
That was pretty good, yeah. If anyone was going to be, I suppose it'd be him. He's fucking huge.
But yeah, they get these 24 Leonardo da Vinci's, and they quickly get into a fight, and then they lose because this the thing they mentioned like half a season ago of like how to deal with the dragon comes into being.
Yeah.
Which is a, was it, it's a super sour plum?
Oh, shit, I think it was something like that, yeah.
Yes. So they have to...
Liked all their explanation for it. It's like, geez, we're getting into the fight offer early. Geez, you're bringing out the dragon awful quick. And it's like, well, it's the last episode. Is there an excuse for all of it?
So they have to rush back to the future to avoid being defeated. But they when they rush back... Oh, no, it's before, so to avoid accidentally killing all the Leonardo da Vinci's, isn't it? Because they're about to crash onto them.
I think it's like the robot they make is a... It's like a Vitruvian Man thing, but it's also a reference to... oh, I can't remember what those little dolls are called, little clay ones. But it's one that it'll win in a pinch.
Yes.
Because it keeps making a pinchy joke.
Yes. Leonardo da Pinci, yes.
That was it. Also, loincloth gets burned off and they're all expecting to see like a robot dick, but obviously there's nothing there because it's a robot.
And then Tokyo's like to Callan, are you disappointed, are you, Callan? She's like, no. Because she's doing the, oh, cover my eyes, but my fingers are wide open. So.
Yeah, and it's just Gundam down there. There's nothing going on, obviously. Yeah. But before they crush the Da Vinci's, they teleport to the future. They time Bokan to the future.
Yes, and accidentally bring all the Da Vinci's back with them, who then run riot. And so
around the place, yeah.
Yes, everyone has to chase after the Da Vinci's and try and capture them. But they fail.
Obviously they fail.
But also, Ayadama has shown up, and he's wearing, underneath his suit, he has one of the Space-Time Administration Bureau uniforms.
Yeah.
And also, apparently, he's very handsome, and we get to hear his real voice.
When we get rid of the laughing man thing over his face.
But when they catch him trying to steal one of the Dynamons is what they
call it. Yeah.
He like tries to convince Callan that he's like about to go into like trying to convince her here that he's her boyfriend.
But yeah, because she's running after him. Is like, I hear my boyfriend somewhere.
The vocoder comes back on again.
And he's trying to knock off the thing that's the little pig skull thing that appears like, over his face.
You don't sound like, anything like my boyfriend.
Yep. She gets pretty pissed.
Yeah, then he runs off in a very comical fashion. He's got a funny comic run.
It's a run, laugh, grunt type of thing he has going on.
But then, of course, the 24 Leonardo da Vinci is still the 24 Mecha.
Because your man who runs the Mecha says, oh, well, da Vinci said he had to, so I'll let him do it. Launch all the fucking robots.
And the da Vinci's alter the robots so they can all combine together into one giant robot. With a very long cockpit, which was another good gag.
Yeah. It's kind of like on the Power Rangers thing where they're all sitting in a line. But 24 of that, it's like, you have to use a fisheye lens to get that in. Oh, dear.
So they beat the bad guys. The Dynamons, though, all end up going back in time.
Yep.
And they round up the Da Vinci's, take them home. But then it turns out, as we see in the future, there's still one Da Vinci left who's with the History Paradise guys.
Yep, and he's painted the Last Supper because it would be their last meal, and he wanted to paint a Last Supper. That was his thing, I guess. I can't remember what number he was.
I can't remember. 23, maybe? Mm. They've all got numbers on their bodies. I wonder if he'll show up, because we then... the trio get laid off. They get suspended for 6 months. They can come back to work in 6 months.
Yeah.
Which was obviously confirming that there'll be another series once My Hero Academia ends.
So yeah, it might just, like you said, I think, be My Hero Academia and Time Bokan, just tagging in and tagging out.
Yeah, I'm all for that, because this just, I think these past three episodes I've really enjoyed, because they set up a formula and then they've subverted that in these past three.
Yeah. And even with this episode, I was kind of worried it was going to get a bit plot heavy, but it just fucking didn't give a shit.
No.
Which is nice, I think.
The My Hero Academia, it was nice icing on the cake. Of, I'm sure other shows have done that in the past, but it's the first time I can remember.
That was already buzzed for it. You didn't need to plug it, lads.
I know, but the idea that they were worried they were losing their job in their cartoon and they wanted to go and get a job in the next cartoon coming along.
Yeah.
This was a nice high to go out on, and yeah, looking forward for its return. Right, and next comedy of the week, Classicaloid.
This is getting plot heavy.
Episode 23, The World of Eight Sounds, Part 1. In which Mitsuru and Bark tries to reveal his plot, but Mitsuru reveals her plot.
Well, the idea is that Bark has his plot, but based on what we've seen in the show so far, his thing doesn't really go to plan.
No.
Which makes perfect sense, given the characters involved.
Yeah, so he's got this machine, Octavo, I believe it's called.
Yeah, I feel like it's, if that's not it, it's close to that. It's based off an actual instrument as well.
Yeah.
I think it's the one they have in the house, isn't it?
I think it's very similar, so I'm sure that will play into it.
Yeah.
So he wants to plug all the Classicaloids into this machine, and then he'll change the world.
Yeah, his thing is like to make, not music for entertainment's sake, but to make music for music's sake.
Well, yes,
he says something vague like that.
Something vague, yes. Something which, obviously, they're going to end up disagreeing with.
Sure.
Once they are actually given a reason to care about it, because that's the problem with this episode, is we'll get to that bit, but there is a really great bit where they explain a load of sci-fi stuff, and the response is hilarious.
That's probably one of the better jokes in it, all right.
So they try and capture all the Classicaloids, but they fail, because they use their music to defend themselves. So Mitsuru goes, well, we don't need them because I've made these Mitsuroids
2.0s. Yeah. And they can all use music and they have perfect control over it.
Yeah, and so she's to Tchaikovsky and Bada, she's like, we don't need you. You can Barrett, you can leave now.
So they're just kind of more upset that they've been fired again. Oh, sorry about the bloody noise. That is the loudest hail I've heard. Sounds like fucking glass or something.
So they're going to use that instead. So they roll up at the house.
Yeah, they've nothing better to do. It's like, what do we do now? It's like, I guess we go to the house. Yes. Where else are we going to do it?
So they get the explanation that there's these robots. They get this long pause. And they go, well, that's great. We don't need to do anything now. We never worry about Bark trying to capture us.
You mean they're not chasing us anymore? Brilliant. I'll just go about my day.
And the way Tchaikovsky pulls out that bottle of vodka from under a dress.
Oh, I was waiting to get my drink on. Yeah. Everyone gets a good bit of just skiving off work, essentially.
But then
one of my favorite parts of that joke was they're discussing all this shit, and God damn it, I was going to say List again. Freaking, why can I never get that freaking composer's name right? The one guy who isn't in the room.
Yes, Chopin.
Chopin obviously isn't there because nobody has noticed that he's not there.
Schubert is the one who's not there, though.
Sorry, Schubert. I keep getting them mixed up. But I thought that was a good bit of joke as well, because obviously that's set up for the thing later on.
Yeah, because they put the TV on and then there's no sound, and it turns out that once they've activated this machine, the only sound which is made by the Classicaloids.
Yeah, it's kind of like noticeable in that you can hear their stomp, 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 and you can hear her smacking the TV, but no other incidental noise.
That works really well. So, yeah, she was outside, and people think he's responsible because they can hear him and they can't hear everybody else. But then it turns out that Mitsuru has made... They might look like the other Classicaloids, but they're actually another 7 Barks, because she's in love with Bark and she wants to Barkify the world.
Yeah, they're basically like... I mean, like, the Beethoven one did summon penguins, but the idea that he's just subservient to Bark's music.
Yes.
He's just... He doesn't have his own sound, as it were.
And so, yes, and then she straps Bark in the machine so he can't get out either. and everybody starts turning into bark.
They start, like, wigs, back wigs just appear in midair, and they start talking like back did. Everyone's really surprised in this episode that he can speak Japanese. Like, it's a new thing. But, yeah, and the zombie back people keep putting those helmets on people, or wigs on people.
There's a great rule of three bit where Sosuke gets a wig on him, and so List slaps him around. Then Kanai gets a wig on her. She gets slapped around, and then they turn around and Sosuke's got wig back on again.
Yeah.
And then we're free, but coming through. Yeah, they can use the music to get rid of the wigs, but there's too many of them. And
just more people coming.
And then Shuba comes through the gate, and he's wearing a wig as well. He's turned into bark.
Yeah, after the Joker was like, listen, we got seven classic lloyds here. We can totally do it. And Sosuke's the one person like, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like, hold on a second. good stuff.
Yeah. I like the other bit is that the dad could have prevented all of this.
But if he wasn't such a fucking bastard.
If he wasn't such a cheapskate, because he hadn't
paid his
bills.
It's like, now to instigate my backdoor program that I set up in that earlier episode, flashback to that episode where he accidentally rescued Sosuke. And he's like, no, to implement it. And it's like, the power gets cut. It's like, Glenn Liddy, I need the power on. It's like, why don't you pay your fucking power then, you cheapskate? Good stuff.
Yeah. It's good.
All his fault.
It did a really good job of like upping the stakes, but at the same time being a silly comedy.
Yeah, they managed to get enough jokes in there. I thought it would have been a bit more problematic if they get focused that much on the plot, because the entire show has not been focusing on the plot.
No.
And the fact that the characters are revealed is like, you got to save the day. It's like, wait, so we don't have to do anything? Great.
But presumably they will have to do something.
Yes.
And I'm guessing it will involve the organ in the house.
Yeah, probably.
And also the grandmother.
Mm.
We shall see. Unless, of course, this is also going to tease a second season.
Yeah, or that entire setup could have been like, you know, red herring.
Yes.
I wouldn't put it past it.
Okay, meanwhile, in Tiger Mask Double, it is, what was this episode called?
War Games Open.
That's it, yes. In which we learn all about War Games, but not the old WCW one. This is even crazier. It's a stack of rings.
Yeah, they hold that back for a bit. It's like, it's weird. It's like no audience in this stadium. It's like, oh, that's kind of odd. It's like I think it's described as like a pyramid.
Yeah, it's like a ziggurat.
Ziggurat. Because of the steps leading up to it as well, have that kind of look. So you got to pin someone on the ground, and then you move into the first ring.
Yes.
And then there's like four rings built into each of the rings. It's just like a little corridor of ring you have to work
with.
Yeah,
there's like five rings on the top of the...
Oh, it's five on the top, is it? Okay.
Yeah, because there's 64 people start in two in four sections of 16. Now you can wander from one section to another if there's someone in particular.
Because all you got to do is pin someone. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, once you pin someone, then you move on to the next ring, which there'll be 32 people will be in there. 16, 8, 4, 2.
Yeah, I'm liking the way tournaments these days seem to be doing a lot of... they're less drawn out, you know?
Yes, yeah. This is pretty... And you can work in... In this one, you're getting loads of plot from previous episodes as well.
Yeah. You're getting reactions from guys like... what's your man's trainer who used to be Yellow Devil?
Let me go to the list of names. It's the name of the company who works. Kentaro Takaoka, yes.
Yes, Takaoka is... he's initially reacting, he's like, time for me to get back in the ring. And they're like, no, you're too old and broken. He's like, oh, disappointed. Yeah. And he's reacting to the third as well.
Yeah, you have
to. So that's obviously something.
Yeah, he's like, oh, they brought that back.
Yeah.
It's also you have to be have either wrestled in GWM or be a former champion with another.
Yeah, because it's a battle of champions or at least former champions, people who've held titles at some point.
Yeah, so and they invite they basically goad New Japan into coming along. So they send Okada, Tanahashi, Nagata, Gedo. Who Okada does not believe he's ever held a belt.
It's like I had a tag team fucking title back in the day.
And they like try to convince Naito to come, and he does eventually come as well. But
yeah, is that just his thing? Is like, I'm too cool to do that.
That is pretty much his thing. Yes.
Okay.
He basically hurls when he's had the belts. He hurls them around and treats them very disrespectfully.
Ooh.
And they tell Ryu he can't come because he's never held.
He doesn't have a belt.
He has wrestled though in GWM as his young dragon or whatever it was. So
that's presumably why he's like, "Bye guys, bye," and then grabbing a bag.
Yes, and grabs it to his back. Yes.
Yeah.
Even though they'll know that it's him because they were in disguise as well.
So. Yeah, I'm pretty sure like at least one of them was there with him in disguise. It's like, oh, that's him.
Miss X wants them, all of the GWM guys, to protect the third, and he's like, no, come at me, anybody wants to come at me. And then he also changes the
rules.
Because
initially it was supposed to be whoever gets to the top ring gets to wrestle the third.
Yes, but then he's going to put up the belt. Whoever wins the thing will get the belt. So confident he is. His abilities.
Well, so far we've just seen him absolutely destroy things, but including the guy who randomly runs into him, because everyone else just kind of like backs away from him. It's like, I'm not wrestling that guy.
And so Tiger Mask and Fukuwara Mask decide they're going to team up,
because Tiger needs someone to team up with him. Is this the first time we see him fully without the mask, Fukuwara Mask?
We saw him turn up at the end of his episode. He showed up to his family restaurant.
I did like the fact that he had to put on the voice while he's on the phone.
Yes.
Talking to Tiger Mask. That was pretty good. And him kind of explaining, just like... And Tiger Mask gets double-teamed by the... Oh, what were those guys called?
They got the Metal Brothers or something?
Something like that. Metal Brothers or something. And he defeats them using comedy.
Yes.
Which is pretty great.
You can't train that area of your body.
I guess, but it's still gross.
But there's also Yellow Devil, and it's like, who is this Yellow Devil? Is it the real Yellow Devil this time, or is it somebody else under the mask?
And obviously Tiger and Dark are both running around trying to find this guy.
Yes. Yeah, because they're about to start on each other, but then Dark spots
what appears to be
Yellow Devil and chases after him. There's like, oh, Bull and Dog are in there, Boss Man, because they attack Tiger the Dark right at the end.
And I presume this is where Kevin's going to come in again.
Yes. And their other mate.
Pretty good. Like, a lot of plot and setup and stuff, but it's a pretty good setup.
Yeah, and this is the best cutaway they've ever had of when Tiger Mask sees Ruriko, and then we get a cutaway of inside the mask and he's blushing.
That is pretty good. Dear.
Yeah, because Haruna gets mad at him. He's like standing there staring.
He's standing there staring and he's like, I hope you do a good job with me. And your one's like, I hope I don't, because that means you've been injured. I'm a nurse, you idiot. He's like, oh, yeah, I knew that. Just him being totally...
I think Haruna kicks him.
Yeah, kicks him right in the butt. Good stuff.
Enjoying this. I wonder how long this will last compared to the Battle Royal over in Dragon Ball Z. Super, rather.
I feel like the Dragon Ball Z one is going to be quicker. Or Super, you can call it that as well now.
Yeah, I know.
So easy. I feel like they're... It's a damn pity. Like, I'm nearly kind of going with Dragon Ball Super. It's like, I kind of wish this tournament would last longer. It sounds like it's going to be super fun.
We shall see.
Mm.
Right, finally tonight, Akka. Episode 10. This one's called Starfall in a City Without a Sky.
Which I thought was like a really... frou-frou title, but then it's like, oh no, it's actually quite literal.
Yes, it is literally about that. So he goes to this territory where they're mining all the time and they live underground because it's so hot.
Is this supposed to be Western Australia, where they, or is that Northern Australia, where they have all the opal mines?
Yeah,
and stuff?
Northern Australia is what my mind went to.
Mm. That's what I was thinking as well.
But it might be something else.
Yeah. It might be referencing something else.
And we see Grushula get Mauve on side.
We kind of, see the setup of that, the Grushula thing of, it kind of does some flashbacks to how their whole plan to make everyone else on board with the coup.
Yeah, the king falls ill, and so Akka are like, oh, we're going to have to act quicker in our coup.
And then your man's like, no, actually, this works out to our advantage.
But the aunt is like, ah, you guys, this time, don't fail to murder people. We've got to murder those
children,
brother and sister, and Schwan, as quickly as possible before the king dies.
Because as soon as the king dies, that's, oh crap, what do they call that, where someone else inherits a kingdom, like, instantaneously, nearly?
I don't know.
I can't remember the word for it, but yeah, they need to make sure there's no question as to who gets it. And we see Jean talking to the guys in that mining place, and they're just totally like, they're very open about it. It's like, yes, we are totally on your side in the coming coup, but we can't really support you because we don't have any money. But, you know, we'll follow you, that kind of thing.
But
frank about it is...
We would like Akka to remain because we don't want other districts trying to attack us if we do find gold or whatever we're looking for.
Yeah. Presumably they must be mining some mineral, because how are they...
Well, I said probably getting coal, maybe.
Yeah, but nothing that's making them rich.
Yeah.
Just making them subsist on mining and watching TV.
But everybody, it seems to be like a complete open secret now that Jean
that's
is
it. It's utterly open in this episode, and you can see Jean's reaction to that, and just kind of going like, yeah, okay. Oh, and the guys in the gambling, the Las Vegas town,
we're going to bet on you.
Put all your chips on you. It's like, that's a heavy bet. It's a bet we can make.
Because we completely live our stereotype.
Yeah. When your man was making the cards thing before, that's just how they talk. Oh, dear.
And then we get, it looks like Lilium's plan is to somehow put all control of the 13 territories in the territory he comes from.
Yeah, and one of the other things was suggesting that while Mauve got on board with Grushula, she just suggests, like, we still don't know if Jean's going to be okay with our plan.
Yes.
He's not on board. Like, he's not said as much, at least. And he hasn't informed on her. He hasn't met with her to inform of stuff in a while. So she's slightly worried about it, obviously.
And the last territory he's got to go to is Lilium's territory.
What a coincidence. And is that what his brother meeting with him there?
It is, yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was two of his brothers, or was it at least... It was at least the guy he met earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
Mm.
Their district looks a bit like Dubai or something.
I was thinking like Dubai or India or something like that.
Yeah.
Eastern to Middle Eastern, that kind of thing.
But yeah, it also looks somewhere super rich though.
Yes, that's the thing, yeah.
So we'll see what he finds when he does his auditing. I kind of wish there was more, because at the start, the auditing seemed to be a bigger part of the plot. But maybe it'll come back around again, and he'll discover something through his auditing this time.
Or maybe it's through being able to fucking look at the papers. Maybe this entire time he's been gathering information that would soothe him, kind of thing.
Yeah, and they also wonder where Nino is this episode. Jean seems to think that Nino is still following him, even though he isn't seeing him, and nor now are we the viewers.
Yeah. And at the end of the episode, it's not Nino doing the voiceover bit. It's actually, is it Jean doing the voiceover at the end this time?
I'm not sure I checked. I may have stopped before that.
That's okay. Just, you know, the bit where they introduce the title and you have someone talking about it, and it's like, I don't think it's your man this episode. Anyway, there's a few things it's kind of setting up, and... It's weird that I'm not sure we have the information to kind of figure out where it's going to go, but you can kind of make guesses at things.
Yeah.
Whereas before we were trying to figure out the conspiracy of it.
Another good bit is the Atoli, Moz and Kelly basically telling Rael to turn over a new leaf.
Oh, yeah.
They're kind of like, well, yeah, if you want Lotta to be interested in you. You want to get stop doing these bad things.
They're very well, not subtly, but kind of like literally cornering him. And he's like, "Hey, don't you fucking break her heart, you son of a bitch. We will fuck you up," but in the nicest kind of smiling way they can.
But then they're also teasing her a bit by saying, "What do you think of the Acker policeman's uniform? Don't you think it's like saying that?"
What about that's the district specific uniform, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. So they're just egging everyone on, really.
Yeah.
Oh, I did like as well. Another thing on it. They obviously Gene and Lotta talk about it later in the episode. They just put their cards on the table and tell each other what they know is happening and that kind of thing. But there is a bit in the conversation where she's just talking to him on the phone and earlier in the episode where she's like, "Stay safe." And there's like a pause there and there's no change on his face or anything. But you can tell it's just like, oh, shit, she knows kind of thing. It's just like it's clear between them at that stage. That I just kind of like that nice moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It worked pretty good. And it kind of shows them because bizarrely, we haven't got to see them much as brother and sister kind of thing.
No, because he's always off at work.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Right, I think it wraps everything else up. So, do you know what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness? Or is that a secret that Niall keeps?
No, this week we should have the Skeleton Warriors coming out, and I think not too far down the line, probably next on the pipeline, is Dr. Katz, I think.
Okie doke. Coming up from Dynamite in the Brain will be the first part of our reviews of the Japan Animator Expo shorts with Niall. Be back for that. Be back here, though, for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Goodbye.
Bye.